Hey guys, it's Erin Andrews from Calm Down with Erin and Carissa. So they say you can't plan for the unexpected, but whoever said that obviously didn't know about Aflac. You probably know the Aflac Duck, but you might not know what Aflac can do for you. For example, did you know they pay cash that can help with expenses health insurance doesn't cover? If you get sick or injured, Aflac pays cash that can be put towards copays and deductibles to even non-medical expenses like rent or your mortgage payments. It's completely up to you. Get help with expenses health insurance doesn't cover. Visit aflac.com to learn more.
We all deserve some yay in our day. So say hello to Hello. Hello makes oral and personal care products that add wonder to your routine, like a toothpaste that makes brushing fun for kids. It's called Unicorn Sparkle Toothpaste. It tastes like rainbows and sunshine, works brilliantly, and it's fun. So it's pretty much magic. And for the adults, Hello Anti-Plaque and Whitening Toothpaste, which is just as good without the unicorns. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.
This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes, boom, boom. These earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment.
The audio transmitter also allows for JBL Spatial 360 sound that takes any audio and turns it into a 360 immersive experience.
What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
Hey guys, it's Erin Andrews from Calm Down with Erin and Carissa. They say you can't plan for the unexpected, but they probably haven't heard of Aflac. You know them as the famous duck, but Aflac is a leader in supplemental insurance. They can better prepare you for life's surprises by helping cover expenses your health insurance doesn't. Even with good health insurance, medical bills are no joke. Many people don't realize health insurance wasn't designed to cover everything, which means money set aside for essentials like rent goes towards unexpected medical bills instead. That's where Aflac comes in. They pay cash that can be used for anything you choose. Think copays, deductibles, and even non-medical expenses like gas or groceries. Without Aflac, if you're sick or injured, gaps in your coverage can come back to haunt you. With Aflac, you can better protect yourself against the unexpected and help provide you and your family with financial security and added peace of mind. You can't predict the future, but you can better prepare for it with Aflac. Get help with expenses health insurance doesn't cover. Visit Aflac.com to learn more.
This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome back to our continuing coverage. I'm Tony Bruschi. We're up to segment number two here on day 22. In the trial of Alex Murdaugh. Let's go to the courtroom.
Thank you. You may proceed. When you picked up that chicken, was there any blood on it?
I don't believe so.
Did you wash your hands or all?
At that point in time? I don't believe that I did.
And when you say you were there, you said Maggie was nearby you. Is that correct?
Right by me.
Was she messing with the hose at all?
At that time, no, she was not.
Did she mess with it the entire time that you were there, according to your new facts today?
While I was there, she did not touch. She was not fooling with a hose at all.
I'm gonna move this thing along. I'm gonna put up on the screen stage 519, which is the condensed timeline. If I could have the computer input, please.
It's a condensed timeline, Mr. Griffin. See that up there, Mr. Murdoch?
Yes.
All right, I'm on page 5. You see that cell tower map there?
That's up on my screen?
Yeah.
I do see that.
Would you agree with me that it reflects no cell tower activity on your phone from 652 to 904?
I do agree with that.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Murdoch. Did you take your phone with you down to the kennels, according to the new facts that you testified to yesterday and today?
I must not have.
You must not have?
If this is accurate, no, sir.
Is that typical for you?
Sure it is. It's absolutely.
Typical. Okay. Tell me why that's typical.
If and when I'm going. Now, it wouldn't be it would be unusual if I was going out for any extended period of time, or if I was going... even on the property, if I was going somewhere for an extended period of time, I would usually have my phone. But for me to go knowing that I'm going to the kennel and coming right back, that's not unusual at all. I mean, there's very, you've heard the testimony about the service out there. The service is terrible. You have to be in a particular spot.
Right.
And you have to find a spot.
So the answer is you don't know whether or not you took it down there.
I believe that I probably didn't, based on this data.
Based on this, but unlike your photographic memory about other things, you don't remember whether or not you had your phone on you.
Mr. Waters, I've never claimed to have a photographic memory, but I do not specifically remember if I had my phone that night. I do not dispute it based on these, on this data, and that's not unusual for me.
Just like you don't remember, according to your new story, the last conversation you had with Maggie.
No, I remember having my last conversation with Maggie.
Looking at this screen, you have the map up there. We're on page 6, and it shows you arriving back at Moselle at 6:42. You don't dispute that now, is that correct?
No, that's what this data appears to show.
And looking at the data... Moving on to page 7, you have Paul arriving about 7:04. Is that correct? You don't have any reason to dispute that?
Well, that's what it says. He arrives at 4147 Moselle Road, which is the address of the shop. The house is 4157. I believe that Paul actually got there a little bit before that. But I think that's approximately accurate.
Okay.
I think Paul got there a little bit closer to 7 o'clock.
All right. You would agree, though, that's the earliest data point that reflects his presence in Moselle?
If that's what the records show.
You don't dispute that?
I don't dispute that. If that's the earliest data point. But again, I believe he got there a little bit earlier. And I tried to look at these records to see if I could, if that could be refuted. And I believe he got there a little closer to 7 or a little bit before 7.
Yeah, that's a good point. You looked at these records a lot before you had your testimony yesterday and today, didn't you, Mr. Murdoch?
I've looked at these records, other than the OnStar records that just came when they were provided to me. Sure, I've looked at them.
Right here, we have some steps on your phone, 29 steps, and then down at the bottom, we have 89 steps. Is that consistent when you and Paul were together on the property?
I mean, sure, we would go to different locations on the property. Sometimes we would get out, sometimes we wouldn't. We'd get out and walk around, we'd look at stuff, we'd do things. For example, you saw me messing with the tree. There'd be other ones. We may get out and look at a feeder. Maybe other ones. We get out and look at hog signs where hogs are rooting. So it would be perfectly consistent with what Paul and I were doing that day.
And 8:05, to 809. Would you agree that that's the last steps recorded on your phone before 902 when you become a very busy bee?
If that's what these records show, I see I took steps. His records show I took steps between 805 and 809.
All right. So would you concede then that you're at the house around 809?
I would have thought so, yes.
Okay. And you said Paul was already back at that point?
No. I said just the opposite.
When did he get there?
All right. Are you talking about when I left the shop and went to the house when Maggie was there?
Yes, before you ate dinner.
No, as I said earlier, Paul and I were at the shop. Mm-hmm. Maggie got home. I left Paul at the shop, and I went to the house. Mm-hmm. I think you were saying that I said I met Paul at the house, and that's incorrect.
But Paul was still down at the shop when you were at the house, correct?
When I first went to the house, Paul was still at the shop, I believe.
All right, and was Maggie there when you arrived at the house?
Yes, I believe she was.
All right. And 809 is the last steps that you have on this phone before 902, correct?
That's what the data shows.
Looking now at page 15. I'm sorry, page 14. Your steps that you say when you got to the house is 809 and Paul was still down at the shop, but don't these records reflect that Paul is pinging with GPS data at the house at 808?
This record appears to show Paul at the house at 808.
All right. So those records don't fit with your new story that you testified yesterday and today. Is that correct?
No, I don't believe even right now, Mr. Waters, that that's right. I'm not saying what you're doing is you're taking 809 and saying that I'm at the house. And I mean, that may or may not be right. But what I'm saying is that when Maggie came through, I left and I believe that Paul stayed at the shop. Now, did Paul come right behind me? I'm not sure. But when I left him, I believe that. When I left to go to the house, I believe that Paul stayed at the shop for a minute.
When you got to the house, did you put your phone down?
I'm sure I did.
Did you put it in the car, in the Suburban?
Did I put it in the Suburban?
When you got back to the house, did you put it in the Suburban? Was the Suburban parked out front?
The Suburban would have been parked wherever I parked it.
Which is where?
I believe on the side.
Okay. And did you put the phone, your phone in the Suburban?
At that time?
Mm-hmm.
No, I did not.
Where'd you put it?
I'm not sure where I put it.
You're not sure about that either, huh?
No, I'm not sure. When I went in the house, I'm not sure where I put my phone. I would think that I put it down somewhere, probably by the couch.
Didn't you testify yesterday when you were being asked by your lawyer about that pause at Alameda when you were leaving, and you had a very specific recollection of your phone had fallen down in the crevice and you had to pick it up and get it out? You remember testifying to that?
I do.
But you don't remember what you did with your phone when you got back at this point, huh?
I mean, Mr. Ward, those are two distinct, different things. I'm coming in the house and I put my phone down. I don't have a routine spot that I put it in, right on this corner or right there, you know.
Yeah.
I would assume that when I went in the house, I put it somewhere, either on the table you go by, going to the couch. I may have taken it to the bathroom when I took a shower.
Story,
it may have taken me a few minutes to go to the shower. So I can't tell you exactly where I put it.
That console story is an awful specific recollection. When you need it to try to make the new story that this jury's hearing and everyone's hearing yesterday and today with the data, correct? But you're awful fuzzy on far more important things, aren't you, Mr. Murdoch?
Which question? I'll answer the first one first. No,
I
don't believe that's convenient, and I disagree with your categorization of the description.
All right. But you remember the console story, but you don't remember where you put your phone, whether or not you took it down to the kennels, whether it was in the, you put it in the Suburban, don't remember any of that, but dadgum, you remember that console story, correct?
Well, I don't remember the console story, but, you know, in that Suburban, and it's not the first time that it happened, but when that phone got down there, you had to go to great efforts to get it out, and you couldn't just reach over there and get it out.
All right. You say when you got to the house that Maggie was already there?
Yes.
Okay. And we saw your last steps were at 8:09?
Well, that's what you saw when this data recorded my last steps. But as you heard this testimony too, Mr. Waters, you know, that's not a precise, that's not a precise, you heard the testimony, you know what it is.
Well, how did you get back to the house? Remind us.
From the shop?
Yeah.
I went in the white pickup truck.
Went in the white pickup truck. Okay. And when you got in the house, where did you go?
We've already discussed this. I took a shower. Whether I did things for a moment before I went to the shower, I'm sure I talked to Maggie because she'd been gone. And if she came through the kennel, which I believe she did, we only talked briefly, so I would have talked to her. But I would have quickly gone to take a shower.
Okay. Going over to page 16. You would agree with me that the data reflects Maggie start logging steps and her phone disconnecting from the Mercedes around 8:17, correct?
I agree. At 8:17, her phone ends connection to her Mercedes.
And starts logging steps.
I don't see that, but I don't dispute it.
Well, you see the purple line talking about it disconnecting from the Mercedes.
I do see. I see where you're talking about. So, yeah, I see it. 8:17, her phone starts logging steps. I agree with that.
Okay. So would you concede that that appears to be when she arrived?
No, I don't believe that's when she arrived. I believe that. I mean, it was very normal for Maggie when she's driving to jump out of the car, run inside, go to the bathroom, do things, and either send me or Paul or go back or Buster or go back to her car herself and unplug her phone. So, I mean, I agree that's when her phone's unplugged, but I believe that Maggie got to the house a little bit before that. That's the whole reason why Paul and I went to the house.
Okay. But you're saying Paul arrived after Maggie, is that what you're saying? At the house.
I believe so, yes, sir.
Okay.
That's what I recall. And Paul arrived at the house after I arrived at the house, I believe. And if Paul got to the house around about that same time, he wasn't inside with Maggie and I when I went to get to the shower.
So you say if Paul got, he wasn't inside with Maggie and you? Is that what you said? Mr. Murdoch, is that what you said?
Sir?
You said if Paul got the house prior to that, he wasn't inside with you and Maggie. Is that what you said?
I'm saying he was not inside when I went to get in the shower.
Okay. But again, looking back at this data point, 8:08, we see a little blue dot right there in the middle of the house, don't we?
Yeah, that's what these records show.
Okay.
And it also shows that circle that folks testified to what the range of what it could be within. So, I mean, it clearly could
look be. Look at that circle. Look at what's right in the middle of that circle. Almost like somebody drew a circle around the house, don't you agree?
Yeah, I do. But also in that circle is where you would park a truck if you pulled up.
All right.
So, you know, and I'm not saying that he wasn't in the house at some point in time there. But when I went to get in the shower, he wasn't in the house. And he very easily could have been there and been parked in the yard.
All right. You agree at the bottom of page 16 that about 8:30, Maggie starts tracking steps again on her phone?
Yes, sir. That's what the data shows.
Oops, hit the wrong button. And you would agree with me that about 8:38, Paul's phone shows him back up at the kennels.
Well, yes, sir. I agree that at 8:38, let me see which one. It's hard for me to figure out which one of these rings, but at 8:38, it shows Paul in whichever one of those rings is 56 meters wide. And I have no reason to believe he wasn't at the kennel.
And then 8:44:55, we've already gone through this, but that's the kennel video, right?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
And you would agree with me that it lasts about 50 seconds, correct?
Yes, sir, I agree with that.
And you would agree with me, moving on to page 19, that both Maggie and Paul's phones locked for the final time around 8:49.
That's what the data shows.
After that, you agree that Maggie's phone around 8:53 shows some steps being taken?
That's what the data shows, yes, sir.
Data doesn't show who's carrying it, but that's what it shows. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. And then you would agree with me that from 9:02 to 9:06, your phone finally comes to life and starts showing a lot of steps.
I do agree with that.
What were you doing?
I was getting ready to go to my mom's house.
Getting ready to go? I thought you took a shower already. You were just laying down on the couch. What all you need to do to get ready to go to your mom's house?
I mean, there wasn't anything to get ready in that aspect.
It wasn't
but
anything to get ready.
I was getting ready to go. I was preparing to leave.
Doing what?
I don't know if I got up, went to the bathroom. I don't know. I can't tell you exactly what I was doing.
Now, that's far more steps in a shorter time period than any time prior, as you've seen from the testimony in this case. So what were you so busy doing?
That's
going to the bathroom?
No, I don't think that I
get on a treadmill?
Went to the bathroom. No, I didn't get on a treadmill.
Jogging place?
No, nope, I didn't jog
did
in
jumping
place.
Jacks?
No, sir, I did not do jumping jacks.
What were you doing, Mr. Murdoch, for those 4 months?
Preparing to leave for my mom's house.
What? What does that mean? I mean, you're in the front room on that couch where you say you laid down. The Suburban's just right outside. What all are you doing?
I don't know if I got up and went to my room, went to the gun room, went back in that.
Doing what? You've been so clear in your new story about everything. What were you doing during these 4 minutes?
I disagree with your assertion about every detail. I don't recall. I know that I was getting up and I was leaving. I was going to check on my mom. But specifically what I was doing, I don't know.
Okay.
I know what I wasn't doing, Mr. Waters, and what I wasn't doing is doing anything, as I believe you've implied, that I was cleaning off or washing off or washing off guns or putting guns in a raincoat, and I can promise you that I wasn't doing any of that.
Okay. Also, during this 4 minutes where you've got 283 steps, not only are you moving around a lot, but you're making a ton of phone calls. Because that in that same time period, you see this red line right here, where over that 4 minute period, all those steps were taken? That's also when you're calling, making all these phone calls, isn't it, Mr. Murdoch?
Well, I made the
so
phone
you're
calls.
So you're running this place and making phone calls? Is that what you're doing?
Allowed to answer before Mr. Waters steps on him again with another question. Please. Thank you.
All right.
You were making all these phone calls while you were taking all these steps. Would you concede that, where you don't remember what you were doing?
Well, I was making phone calls, and that's shown here. At 9:05, I called my dad. You know, I don't know that I was taking steps like you're saying I'm taking steps. I heard the same testimony you heard, Mr. Waters, and, you know, steps can be recorded any number of ways. I don't have a specific recollection of walking around. I don't know if I was hitting my phone like the guy showed or doing whatever that makes steps. But you know,
so you were hitting your phone like that while you were making all these phone calls?
Hang on, no, sir. What I'm saying, Mr. Waters, I don't know that. I'm just giving you an example. You're saying that I'm running around taking these steps, and while I'm doing that, I'm making telephone calls. What I will agree with is that this data shows that there was 283 steps recorded on my phone. Mm-hmm. And sometime during that period, I made certain phone calls.
Okay. All right. So not only for whatever it is recording steps, but you're also making a ton of phone calls, including missed calls to Maggie, who is 1,100 feet away, supposedly.
You're using the term a ton of phone calls.
Yeah.
What I agree is that I made the phone calls that are listed on these call data records, mm-hmm. which, you know, are very normal phone calls for me. Mm-hmm.
Do you know why so many phone calls were missing from the log around this relevant time period when law enforcement downloaded your phone on June 10th?
From my phone?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Did you delete them, Mr. Murdoch?
Not intentionally.
Just around the time of June 7th, all these calls are missing, but you had nothing to do with that between June 7th and June 10th.
No, sir, I did not. Mm-hmm. And I did not delete phone calls from my phone. Mr. Waters, one of the most important things in this whole thing for me has been getting this data that I believe would exist. Phone calls and phone records would be part of that. I've been in enough civil cases and used phone records enough times to know that you delete a phone call from your phone, it doesn't disappear. So I can tell you, this jury, and everybody who's listening that I did not intentionally delete phone calls from my phone.
Yeah, because you started talking about you're a former prosecutor, correct? And former lawyer doing civil cases. We went through that yesterday. And boy, you're busy bee on that phone right out of the gate at 9:02, right?
Objections overruled.
Am I a busy bee?
Yeah.
I am using my telephone at, I think I call at 9:05, I start and call my dad, and I agree that I made other phone calls.
And one of the first things you start talking about with law enforcement is these calls that you made to Maggie, correct? You recall that from your first statement to law enforcement?
One of the first things that I said to law enforcement?
Yeah, that's one of the things you talk about. I'm talking about with your interview with Special Agent Dave Owen.
I don't remember that being the first thing we talked about, but if Mr. Owens asked me about it, then I...
No, you brought it up, didn't you?
I did.
You don't recall?
No, I don't recall.
Would you dispute me if I said you brought it up?
Did I brought up... What brought
your
up
phone,
what?
Phone, Mr. Murdoch, your phone.
Phone calls to Maggie?
Yes.
That I brought up phone calls to Maggie to David Owens.
I'm asking you, is that one of the things that you talked about in your first interview with Dave Owen? That you pulled out your phone and started looking at it, that you brought that up? Do you recall that?
Well, but that's not what you asked, Mr. Owens. You asked me, was that the first thing that I talked to him about? And that was the discrepancy. I certainly don't dispute that Mr. Owens and I talked about phone calls. But that's not what you said, so just right. To be clear.
Well, the real reason, Mr. Murdoch, is that you as a lawyer and prosecutor are up at 9:02, finally having your phone in your hand, moving around and making all these phone calls to manufacture an alibi. Is that not true?
That's absolutely incorrect.
So that's just another circumstance and coincidence in this particular case. Right around the time
that you lied to law enforcement about maybe one of the most important facts in the case?
Objection. Comment before the question.
It is an absolute fact that I am not manufacturing an alibi, as you say.
How do you remember so much detail about everything else, but you don't remember what you were specifically doing to generate 283 steps while you're making all these phone calls in the same four-minute period?
I remember unequivocally, without any doubt, with as clear a mind as I could have at any time, that I never manufactured any alibi in any way, shape, or form, because I did not and would not hurt my wife and my child.
So why can't you remember what you were doing?
So I know for a fact that I never, ever, ever created an alibi.
Why don't you remember what you were doing when you were so busy for this four-minute critical period?
I do remember what I was doing.
Other than I was getting ready to go.
Because that's what I was doing.
Okay. Well, let's keep going. You made those calls to Maggie in that four-minute period. You had just seen them a few minutes ago when you say you went down there and came right back. Why didn't you just take that quick little left 1,100 yards away and stop by? See why they didn't answer the call. You're obviously wanting to get in touch with them. Why didn't you go down to the kennels that were so close by?
There was no reason to. I mean,
You're making multiple missed calls to Maggie, and she's so close. And there's a driveway right there. Why do you not just go down there and say, hey, guys, I'm heading over there?
It wasn't important to do that. Me making those phone calls is simply me letting, I believe I called Maggie and I called Paul, but that's simply me just letting them know that I'm leaving for a minute, I'll be back. The fact that they don't answer is not unusual at all. Now, it is odd, it is unusual that they never call me back. But at that moment, the fact that there's a missed call, when I know they're on the property, I mean, that doesn't even register at all. That's perfectly normal to try to call somebody who's on the property and not be able to get them. And as far as not going down there, there was no sense of urgency. Maggie was with Paul. You know, she should be as safe as she could be.
Yeah, she should. Did you talk with Maggie about going to Almeda when you were at the kennels?
No, I don't believe I did.
Did you talk with Maggie about going to Almeda during supper?
I know that we had talked about it. I don't believe we talked about it at supper, but we may have. I know that I had talked about that I was going to go over there. And then I decided that I wasn't going to go over there.
What was your conversation at supper? Tell me specifically, if you could, please. Going to Almeda.
I can't tell you that we specifically talked about it. The only thing that I can tell you we specifically talked about at supper was Pawpaw.
All right. And what was the conversation?
Maggie was just concerned. Paul had been having high blood pressure. And he's very resistant to go to the doctor. And this has been going on for a little while, but lately Paul's feet had swollen. And for a 22-year-old to have start having swollen feet concerned both of us. and it particularly concerned Maggie. And we talked about that.
Okay. Did y'all talk about Mr. Randolph at all?
I'm sure we did.
Do you remember that group text coming in about whether or not anybody was going to go see Mr. Randolph at the hospital the next day?
Do I remember it coming in?
Yeah.
I don't remember it coming in.
Because you didn't read it till the next day. But
I've seen the data.
Why didn't you, did you ever text the group and say you were going to Alameda at all?
No.
Did you and Maggie ever specifically discuss her going along with you to Alameda?
I don't believe that we did. I know that there was a point in time where I said Maggie might go, but it's highly unusual for Maggie to go and visit just my mom. That whole situation, it made Maggie sad, and she didn't like to go. So
you,
I don't believe that we did, but I do acknowledge that at some point I said she might go for some reason.
You told law enforcement on multiple occasions that, first of all, Maggie was planning to stay at Edisto the night of June 7th, correct?
I did say that.
All right. And you also said that you came to find out that she came home of her own accord, correct? You told that to law enforcement. Is that true?
She did come home of her own accord.
That she decided on her own to come home because she was worried about you. Isn't that what you said?
I did say that, and I believe that to be the case.
All right. But since despite what you told law enforcement, we've since seen the texts that you actually called her and asked her to come home on the night of June 7th.
No, sir. That's not correct.
That's not correct?
No, sir. That's absolutely not correct.
All right. So you heard your sister-in-law, Marion, testify to just that fact of a conversation she had with Maggie, but you're saying that's not true?
I don't believe that's what Marion said.
And your defense put in this exhibit, Exhibit 107, where Maggie texted Blanca and said, Alec wants me to come home.
I've seen that. I agree with that.
Is that it up on the screen? Oh, I've got the wrong input here. I'll just hold it up. You've seen this text?
I have seen that. Mr. Waters, the only dispute I have with what you're saying is you're saying that I called Maggie and wanted her to come home. I always wanted Maggie to come home, and I would have talked to Maggie about coming home before she ever left to go to Charleston and to Edisto. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you this, and I didn't realize this at the time, but I realize it now, that Maggie was already undecided. Now, I didn't know this, but Maggie was already undecided about staying at Edisto. I can promise you that, because Bubba and Grady were in their kennels, as y'all well know, that night, that day. If Maggie was certain that she was spending the night at Edisto, at a minimum, Bubba would have been with her, and probably both dogs would have been with her. It was very unusual for her to spend the night anywhere without one of us or those dogs. So
you're
that
saying,
tells me that when she left that morning, she was already seriously thinking about coming back.
So you're saying that you never called her and had a conversation that day asking her to come home specifically on the night of June 7th, 2021?
Maggie and I had a couple of phone conversations that day. What I'm telling you is that before she left... No, I don't believe we had a phone call about that. We may have discussed it during the phone call, but I didn't make a phone call to her to ask her to come home. I had already told her I wanted her to come home. I always wanted her to come home. You heard Marion say that too, that I always wanted Maggie with me.
Maggie thought enough of it to talk about it with Marion, didn't she?
The fact that I wanted her to come home?
Correct.
Well, sure. I mean, that's what Marion said.
So you're denying that you called Maggie and specifically asked her to come home that night?
I didn't make a phone call to Maggie to ask her to come home that night. I asked Maggie to come home long before she ever left. And I probably asked her again each time I talked to her, but I didn't make the phone call specifically for that, as you're saying. And to be clear, I'm certain that if Maggie was certain that she was spending the night, Bubba would have been with her and probably Grady.
All right. Why did you tell law enforcement, though, that you found out after the fact that Maggie wanted to come home because she was concerned about you? Why did you phrase it that way if what you're saying to the jury now was accurate? Why would you phrase it that way?
Because I believe that to be the case.
That you found out afterwards, but now you're saying you knew.
No, I'm saying I found out afterwards why she came home, Mr. Waters. And she came home because she was worried about me. So I'm going to be clear about that. I did not learn that until I think the day after she got killed.
But you're saying that you found out that after the fact, but you're telling this jury that you knew the things that you just said about her wanting to come home. And you were unaware of what Marion would say at that point either.
No, I'm saying at that time, I had not thought about Bubba and Grady. Since that time, I've thought about that. I'm certain of that. At the time, I thought Maggie was staying at Edisto. All right? She was going to Edisto to do to meet the people, to do the work. Maggie loved to stay at Edisto. There's no doubt about that. It would not be unusual at all for her to stay at Edisto. But just like every other time, I had already asked her, please come back, come back. Always wanted her to stay with me. Always. But I did not learn about, and Maggie even texted me, I'll see you in a few hours. But I did not know why she decided to come back until later, is what I'm saying. And I learned it from Blanca. Blanca actually showed me the text that she sent her talking about being worried about me.
You would agree with me that you sent a text to Maggie at 908:58 while in motion in the Suburban, as reflected by the data?
I do. Which was because I couldn't reach them by the telephone and I wanted them to know where I was.
Okay.
Which is what we do.
And you got to Alameda around 9:22?
I believe that's correct.
I can go down to it.
No, I don't have any reason to dispute that.
Made some more phone calls along the way.
I did make more phone calls along the way while I was riding.
Called Chris Wilson?
I did call Chris Wilson.
Had a short conversation with him. Is that right?
I did have a conversation for however long the record show.
About 131 seconds, that sound about right?
If that's what the record show, 2 minutes.
Called your brother, John Marvin, for about 106 seconds, including connection time. Does that sound about right?
That does sound about right.
Arrived at 9:22. Does that sound about right?
It does.
And then at 9:24, you call, that's the landline at Alameda, is that correct?
That is correct.
And then you went inside, is that right?
Yeah, that's
right.
Talked
to Ms. Shelley?
That's right. I called the house phone to get Shelley to let me in.
And when you were asked by law enforcement how long you were at your mother's house, you said 45 minutes to an hour. Wasn't that correct?
I think I said a couple of different things, but I think at one time I did say that. But, you know, routinely through this thing, I kept saying, you know, when you get this data, you'll see exactly. When you look at my phone, you'll see exactly. When you do, you know, so, you know, me giving the times was always given with the thought that, okay, that there's OnStar out there, there's whatever.
But when you had a conversation with Ms. Shelley after the fact, you actually asked her to say that you were there longer than 20 minutes.
You know, I heard Shelley's testimony. I believe Shelley to be a good person. I wasn't trying to influence Shelley on any particular length of time because at the beginning of this, I believed that data would show what data would show. And for me to tell her to say something when my own star is going to show something different just doesn't make any sense. So, you know, I can't answer that. What my recollection is that I told Shelley that that law enforcement would be talking to her. We may have discussed how long I was there. At that point in time, if I thought I was there 45 minutes, I may have said I was here 45 minutes, but, you know, I can't tell you.
All right. And that's the same thing that Blanca testified to, that you talked to her about the clothes that you were wearing and made her uncomfortable, correct?
Ask that question again.
It's similar to your conversation with Blanca that she testified about when you talked to her about the clothes that you were supposedly wearing.
What
made her feel uncomfortable? Do you remember that testimony, sir?
What's similar to that?
Well, that you're talking to both of these individuals about their testimony in a manner that's inconsistent with what they know.
No, I don't think your assertion is accurate. You have to understand this. On August the 11th, when I went to meet with David Owens, and in that, David Owens asked me about, he showed me that Snapchat and asked me about clothes that I had on. And shortly after that, the next time I was with Blanca, I asked Blanca about those clothes because David Owens had asked me about them and made an issue about it. And so I checked with Blanca to see what I specifically asked Blanca, and it was an issue to me. So I got Blanca and I said, I need you to sit down and talk with me about this. This is important. Do you remember my clothes when you came to Moselle that day? And she remembered exactly what she testified to. She remembered that my pants were there. She wasn't sure if the shirt was there. At that time, I think she actually thought the shirt was there, but she was clear that she wasn't sure about that. She wasn't unsure, but she didn't remember, but assumed that it was. So that was the conversation and why I was asking Blanca.
Boy, again, you're very specific about your memories of that conversation. Is that correct, Mr. Murdoch?
You're dang right. I'm consistent about that because a very short time before that, David Owens is asking me questions and telling me I'm a suspect in the murder of my wife and my child and asking me about my clothes. You're dang right it was important.
It was important, right.
And you're dang right I remember why I went to her and for what reason.
Because the only thing you're concerned about is yourself. You're not concerned about giving accurate information to law enforcement, correct? What's the reason for that, Mr. Murdoch? Why don't you want to give accurate information to law enforcement? Why do you want to talk to these women who both are employed by you or your family and try to influence what they are going to say?
I did want to give law enforcement accurate information. I told a lie about being down there, and I got myself wed to that. But I wanted to give them as much. I knew that I hadn't done this, and I wanted to give them as much accurate information as I could. But the reason I went to Blanca is specifically because David Owens talking to me on August the 11th.
Okay. You can see that you're underway about 9:42, heading back. I 9:42 to 9:43.
I do.
Turned on Moselle about 10:01.
Turned into Moselle at 10:01?
Yeah. Sorry.
It looks to me like I turned into Moselle at 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock on the dot, sir.
Yes, sir.
At the house at 10:05.
Yes, sir.
And then that's when you went back to the kennels after you came back from Alameda, correct?
I went to the kennels after I went to the house. I went from Alameda to the house to the kennels.
And we got to the scene. You got out of the car, according to what you told law enforcement repeatedly, and went and checked the bodies, correct? Before you called 911, is that correct?
No, sir, that's not correct.
You're saying you didn't say that to law enforcement?
I don't know what I said to law enforcement, Mr. Waters, but I can tell you this. Mm-hmm. When I pulled up and I saw Max and Paw, I jumped out of that car. I know that I went back to my car and I called 911 as quickly as I could. That point in time, when I got on the phone, then is when I went to them and did the things that I did.
So,
you're saying is not accurate.
You're saying that you didn't say very specifically to law enforcement that you went to them prior to calling 911.
When?
After you got out of the car, you told law enforcement repeatedly that you went over and checked the bodies before you called 911.
No, I don't. If I did say that, I don't believe that's accurate. Did I check Maggie and Paul before I called 911?
Correct.
No, sir. That's not accurate. At least that's not what I remember.
That's not what you remember saying, or that's not what you say now happens?
No, that's not what I believe happened.
Okay. But you don't deny that's what you said.
Did I check Maggie and Paul before I called 911?
Correct.
I don't believe that's what I said. Now, I know I checked them, but I don't believe I checked them before I called 911. Because I can pretty well remember vividly When I checked Pawpaw, I was already on the phone with 911.
Looking at this data, to show the vehicle parking at 10:05 and 55 seconds.
Yes, sir.
10:05:57, the Suburban arrives at the kennels. You agree with that?
I'm sorry, say that again, Mr. Warden.
At 10:05:57, it shows the Suburban arriving at the kennels.
Okay.
The 911 call was at 10:06:14.
Okay.
Just about 20 seconds later. You agree with that?
I think that sounds right. Yes, sir. I mean, that makes sense. But that goes back to what I'm saying is I pulled up. I saw them. And I know I jumped out of my car. But I believe that before I checked them, in fact, I'm almost certain that then I went back and I got my, that's when I went and got my phone and I called 911.
Okay.
And then after I called 911, there was a little while where there wasn't, I don't think there was anything going on. And I believe that that is the time period that I went and checked on them.
I don't want to belabor this point, but that what you're saying here today, now that we have this data, that's not exactly how you expressed it to law enforcement in your prior statements. Is that correct?
No, sir. I disagree with that. Okay. I totally disagree with that, Mr. Waters. Will you point to what you're talking about?
All right, sir. I'm not at the house, but I'm watching.
12:57.
All right, Ms. Murdoch, state your full name for me, please.
Richard Alexander Murdoch. M-U-R-D-A-U-G-H.
All right. And you go by Alec? Yes, sir. And date of birth, Mr. Murdoch?
May 27th, 1968.
And a good phone number for you.
803-942-1227.
And sir, what was your name?
Yeah, Danny Henderson.
Okay. All right. As I stated, I'm David Owen in Lower Rutland with Tonopah County. I'm with SLED. I hate to have to do this.
I understand. Yeah. I totally understand. Yeah. So you don't have any problem with it.
So, just start at the top, take your time.
Like when I came back here, mm-hmm. I mean, I pulled up and I could see him, and, you know, I knew something was bad. I ran out. I knew it was really bad. And my boy over there, I could see it was... I could see his brain. And I ran over to Maggie. And actually, I think I tried to turn Paul over first. You know, I tried to turn him over, and I don't know, I figured it out. His cell phone popped out of his pocket. I started to try to do something with it, thinking maybe, but then I put it back down really quickly. Then I went to my wife, and I mean, I could see... Mm-hmm.
Did you touch Maggie at all?
I did. I touched them both.
Okay.
I tried to take, I mean, I tried to do it as limited as possible, mm-hmm. but I tried to take their pulse on both of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I called 911 pretty much right away, and she was very good. I talked to her. I told her I was going to get off the phone to call some family members. I did that.
What family members did you call him?
I called my brother Randy. And I called my brother John. And I tried to call a little boy, a real good friend that's right around the corner from here, but I didn't get him.
That person you didn't name, that was Rogan, the little boy right around the corner. Is that who you're talking about?
That's correct. But going back to your question, I mean, that's the way I remember it, what I said right there. And I, you know, your question about did I do these things before I called 911, that's not what I said then, and that's not what I remember now.
Okay. So you're saying now that you went out, you checked, you came back, got your phone, and that's when you called 911?
I'm not saying that now, Mr. Woods. I am saying that now, but to me, that's what I said then. I mean... I told her, I called 911 right away. I didn't have, there was no time to do the things that I'm talking about doing in the time between getting there and calling 911.
When you talked about calling Rogan, and you said that he lived right around the corner, correct?
That's correct.
All right. But Rogan wasn't staying there at the time. That's the whole reason that Cash was at your kennel, right? You knew that.
Well, Rogan was staying in Buford a lot, but he was home a lot too. I didn't know where Rogan was on a daily basis.
About keeping his dog Cash at the kennels when he was staying with his girlfriend and working down in Buford?
Yes, he had asked me that. But I mean, that had been some time before. I didn't know. You're making a big deal about this, Mr. Waters, but that particular night, I didn't have a clue where Rogan was staying or not staying. I was trying to find somebody to come out there with me. I'd called Randy, I'd called John, and Rogan was the next best alternative.
Okay.
And Rogan is so close. I mean, Rogan, of all these kids that you've heard, Rogan, Gibson, Roro is like a Rogan, you prefer when I call him Rogan, is truly like a son to Maggie and I. And he was such a good friend to Buster, and he was such a good friend to Paul. And you've been through everything I have. You'll see that 2 weeks or 3 weeks prior to this, I ran out of gas when Bus and Paw weren't home. And Rogan's the person that I called to bring me gas.
Okay. Nobody's disputing any that Rogan would have helped you. Let me keep playing this.
Around Paul when you walked up.
Blood.
Anything else?
I mean, there were some body things, yes, sir.
I mean, like any other evidence. I know you said the phone fell out of the pocket, but did you see anything else that didn't belong or shouldn't belong or that wasn't part of Paul?
No, sir, not. No, not. No, sir.
How about Maggie?
No, sir.
You didn't see anything around them? What made you come out here tonight?
I went to, my mom's a late stage Alzheimer's patient. My dad's in the hospital. My mom gets anxious when she does. I went to check on them and Maggie. Maggie's a dog lover. And okay. She fools with the dogs. And I knew she'd gone to the kennel. I was at the house.
You just testified that in the wake of this, you didn't know what you said to law enforcement. That was what you just said.
No, I mean, I know a lot of what I said to law enforcement, but there's a lot of things in looking back at this video for one, the 911 call for one. I mean, there's a lot of things that I didn't remember.
Okay. But right then and there, just not long into this interview, you made a conscious decision to lie right there.
Play that again.
You said, I was at the house.
And I knew she'd gone to the kennel. I was at the house. I left the house.
Played.
You want me to back it up some more?
Well,
yeah, we can keep listening to it.
Anything around now? What made you come out here tonight?
I went to, my mom's a late stage Alzheimer's patient. My dad's in the hospital. My mom gets anxious when she does. I went to check on them and Maggie. Maggie's a dog lover. Okay. She fools with the dogs. And I knew she'd gone to the kennel. I was at the house.
You want to hear it again?
No, sir, but I don't
so
think...
So you made a conscious decision to lie right there, this early into an interview, sitting in the front seat, correct?
I don't believe so.
You didn't make a conscious decision to lie?
I don't believe that. I don't believe that was lying at that point.
Okay, tell me why not.
Because Maggie had gone to the kennels, and I was at the house.
Okay. So you think you were being... That was not a lie at that point?
I don't believe so.
At what point did you decide to lie?
I'm not sure, but it was in that.
It was in this interview?
I believe that it was.
Okay. Was this interview where you're sitting in the front seat, correct?
It is.
You're not in custody, correct?
I'm not in custody.
They're giving you water, letting you chew tobacco, treating you politely, correct?
They were treating me very politely.
So what was it that clicked? So you said it's this interview that it clicked that I'm going to lie about the most important fact that I know?
I'm not sure exactly when in it that I lied, decided to lie, but I believe it was during this interview. I believe all those things that I talked about, those things that had gone on, the things that people had said to me about don't talk to anybody without a lawyer. Partners all told me that, or a lot of my partners told me that. My dear friend, Chief Alexander, was one who said that. I believe it was Sheriff Hill. I'm not positive. I overheard him tell, I believe, Mark Ball or Gray Holmes, don't let him talk to anybody without a lawyer. And what I believe is that based on my distrust of SLED and getting in that interview, and I'm not positive about this, but I believe when he asked me, about my relationship with my wife and my son, I believe that's when I decided to lie. But I'm not positive.
You left out when you had the GSR, too, because that's what you testified to yesterday.
That certainly contributed.
And your dope paranoia, too. You said that as well, correct?
Well, those things are what triggered the paranoia that started as my addiction evolved.
Right. And so you're an experienced lawyer and you've been a prosecutor, and you took the advice of your law partners that you should have a lawyer there, as you read that as, oh, I should lie.
No, that's not an accurate.
Because that's not what that means, is it, Mr. Murdoch?
That's not an accurate statement, what you just said, Mr. Waters.
I just repeated what you just said. You said one of the factors was your law partners, and now you're blaming Sheriff Hill and Greg Alexander, told you that you needed a lawyer before you talked to police, and you took that somehow as meaning I need to lie?
No.
As a lawyer and a prosecutor?
No, that's what you said, Mr. Waters.
Right,
but
am I mischaracterizing it from your perspective, Mr. Murdoch?
Because
I think isn't that what you heard? Isn't that what you just said? Excuse me.
No, sir. That's not what I said.
All right, so, say it again.
I believe those guys were trying to help me. I believe they cared about me. I believe they thought that I was in a condition such that I shouldn't talk to anybody. I mean, those guys had to prop me up, help me get myself together just to be able to go talk to David Owens. I mean, they were trying to help me. But before that was just one of the many things that I believe led to that situation sitting in there where those paranoid thoughts came to me. Them talking about not talking to anybody without a lawyer, Brian Varnado, checking my hands, the fact that I got a pocket full of pills in my pocket. I was the person who found Maggie and Paul. My distrust for SLED, all of those factors combined and made me decide to lie. I also know him asking me about Maggie and Pawpaw contributed to that paranoia. All I'm saying is I'm not disputing that I lied. I'm just saying at this point, you're saying I made a conscious decision to lie here, and I'm saying I don't think I made a conscious decision right there.
Okay, so it's lighter?
I believe so.
Had you already had your GSR done at this point?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I had.
And you already talked to your law partners and talked to and heard Sheriff Hill. Now you're blaming him and Chief Alexander now as well for your lies?
No, sir, Mr. Waters.
Well, you just added that one. You didn't say that yesterday. You just added that one.
Please be given an opportunity to answer the question.
Objection.
Can finish your last answer.
All right. Mr. Waters, I'm not blaming anybody. I accept full responsibility for what I did. What I'm saying is what I believe contributed to me doing that and the reason why I did that. I think those folks were trying to help me. So I don't blame them. I think they were worried about me.
Okay. I don't dispute that, but you're saying you took that advice as I need to lie.
Nah. What you're doing is you're isolating one single thing.
I'm not isolating anything. I've mentioned all the factors. You've added some new ones, but I mentioned all the factors that you're blaming for your decision to lie.
That's not what you did. What you asked me is you said I took my partner's telling me not to talk to somebody without a lawyer as a reason to lie. And that's an inaccurate statement. That was one of the factors that went into a series. Hang on, Mr. Waters. A series of events, all right, that caused me to have paranoid thinking, all right, and then I lied.
All right. But at some point it happened during this interview that you crossed over. You're saying that you came into this interview intending to be fully disclosing to everything, and something happened in this interview that sent you over the edge, and you said, hey, let me lie about the last time I saw my wife and child alive, supposedly, according to me.
I certainly didn't go into that interview, I believe, intending to lie. Mr. Okay. Waters, I wasn't capable at that point in time of planning anything or thinking through anything.
So somehow during this interview, all of a sudden, those senses came to you to plan and do that.
When I got to thinking in that paranoid way, that normally, as I said, I mean, I could take a deep breath and make it go away. I never had a situation where it lasted more than a matter of seconds. That night, after all those things had happened, it didn't go away in a matter of seconds. And I decided to lie.
Those are the clothes that you ultimately gave to Dave Owen, is that right?
Those are the clothes I gave to David Owens.
At what point did you be able to chuck the pills you say are in your pocket? When did you do that?
When I was in my bedroom.
And you're in the bedroom?
Yes, sir.
Where'd you put them?
I'm not sure where I put them, but ultimately they would have gone in my suitcase.
So that's when you did it? Do you have a specific recollection of that?
No, I don't. I just know that I took them out of my pocket.
If we watch this whole video, you think you could, if we watch the whole thing, you think you can say, okay, that's the moment where my senses came to me and I decided I was going to tell this major lie?
I don't know that it happened like that, but I mean, I may be able to tell you some things that contributed to it if we watched the whole thing.
Yeah, we've heard that. I just want to be clear, though. At least on this one, at some point during this interview, when you were able to plan your lie about this event, and you made that decision.
Obviously,
but it wasn't what we just played. It wasn't yet. It was some point after that.
I don't think that's a lie right there. Is the reason why I don't think that it's occurred before this, because what I'm saying there, I believe to be truthful. And I know for a fact that when David Owens asked me about my relationship with my wife and my child, I know that that played a role in that. And I believe that, and I may be wrong, but I believe that this was before that.
You ever heard the expression, not telling the whole truth is the same as telling the lie?
Sure I have.
That's something you understood as a lawyer and a prosecutor?
Yes.
All right.
All right, Mr. Murdoch. State your full name for me, please.
Richard Alexander Murdoch.
And spell your last name so I get it correct.
M-U-R-D-A-U-G-H.
All right. And you go by Alec?
Yes, sir.
And date of birth, Mr. Murdoch?
May 27th, 1968.
And a good phone number for you.
803-942-1227.
And sir, what was your name?
Yeah, Danny Henderson.
Okay. All right. As I stated, I'm David Owen in Lower Rutland with Tompkins County. I'm with SLED. I hate to have to do this.
I understand. Yeah. I totally understand. Yeah. So you don't have any problem with it.
So you hadn't decided to lie right there, correct?
I don't believe so.
And you told David Owen that you understood that he had to ask questions and you do what you need to do, correct?
That is what I told him.
Ron, this might be a good time for a break.
Clock. Ladies and gentlemen, addressing the jury, we'll break till 2:15. We'll go to the jury room. Please do not discuss the case.
That wraps up segment number two in our continuing coverage in the trial of Alec Murdaugh. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our updates and discussions on the case. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes, boom, boom. These earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment.
The audio transmitter also allows for JBL Spatial 360 sound that takes any audio and turns it into a 360 immersive experience.
What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
Hey guys, it's Erin Andrews from Calm Down with Erin and Carissa. They say you can't plan for the unexpected, but they probably haven't heard of Aflac. You know them as the famous duck, but Aflac is a leader in supplemental insurance. They can better prepare you for life's surprises by helping cover expenses your health insurance doesn't. Even with good health insurance, medical bills are no joke. Many people don't realize health insurance wasn't designed to cover everything, which means money set aside for essentials like rent goes towards unexpected medical bills instead. That's where Aflac comes in. They pay cash that can be used for anything you choose. Think copays, deductibles, and even non-medical expenses like gas or groceries. Without Aflac, if you're sick or injured, gaps in your coverage can come back to haunt you. With Aflac, you can better protect yourself against the unexpected and help provide you and your family with financial security and added peace of mind. You can't predict the future, but you can better prepare for it with Aflac. Get help with expenses health insurance doesn't cover. Visit Aflac.com to learn more.
This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes, boom, boom. These earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment.
The audio transmitter also allows for JBL Spatial 360 sound that takes any audio and turns it into a 360 immersive experience.
What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
Hey guys, it's Erin Andrews from Calm Down with Erin and Carissa. They say you can't plan for the unexpected, but they probably haven't heard of Aflac. You know them as the famous duck, but Aflac is a leader in supplemental insurance. They can better prepare you for life's surprises by helping cover expenses your health insurance doesn't. Even with good health insurance, medical bills are no joke. Many people don't realize health insurance wasn't designed to cover everything, which means money set aside for essentials like rent goes towards unexpected medical bills instead. That's where Aflac comes in. They pay cash that can be used for anything you choose. Think copays, deductibles, and even non-medical expenses like gas or groceries. Without Aflac, if you're sick or injured, gaps in your coverage can come back to haunt you. With Aflac, you can better protect yourself against the unexpected and help provide you and your family with financial security and added peace of mind. You can't predict the future, but you can better prepare for it with Aflac. Get help with expenses health insurance doesn't cover. Visit Aflac.com to learn more.
This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes, boom, boo. These earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment.
The audio transmitter also allows for JBL Spatial 360 sound that takes any audio and turns it into a 360 immersive experience.
What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
Hey guys, it's Erin Andrews from Calm Down with Erin and Carissa. They say you can't plan for the unexpected, but they probably haven't heard of Aflac. You know them as the famous duck, but Aflac is a leader in supplemental insurance. They can better prepare you for life's surprises by helping cover expenses your health insurance doesn't. Even with good health insurance, medical bills are no joke. Many people don't realize health insurance wasn't designed to cover everything, which means money set aside for essentials like rent goes towards unexpected medical bills instead. That's where Aflac comes in. They pay cash that can be used for anything you choose. Think copays, deductibles, and even non-medical expenses like gas or groceries. Without Aflac, if you're sick or injured, gaps in your coverage can come back to haunt you. With Aflac, you can better protect yourself against the unexpected and help provide you and your family with financial security and added peace of mind. You can't predict the future, but you can better prepare for it with Aflac. Get help with expenses health insurance doesn't cover. Visit Aflac.com to learn more.
This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes, boom, boo. These earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment.
The audio transmitter also allows for JBL Spatial 360 sound that takes any audio and turns it into a 360 immersive experience.
What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
Hey guys, it's Erin Andrews from Calm Down with Erin and Carissa. They say you can't plan for the unexpected, but they probably haven't heard of Aflac. You know them as the famous duck, but Aflac is a leader in supplemental insurance. They can better prepare you for life's surprises by helping cover expenses your health insurance doesn't. Even with good health insurance, medical bills are no joke. Many people don't realize health insurance wasn't designed to cover everything, which means money set aside for essentials like rent goes towards unexpected medical bills instead. That's where Aflac comes in. They pay cash that can be used for anything you choose. Think copays, deductibles, and even non-medical expenses like gas or groceries. Without Aflac, if you're sick or injured, gaps in your coverage can come back to haunt you. With Aflac, you can better protect yourself against the unexpected and help provide you and your family with financial security and added peace of mind. You can't predict the future, but you can better prepare for it with Aflac. Get help with expenses health insurance doesn't cover. Visit Aflac.com to learn more.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest. Life comes at you fast, which is why it's important to find some time to relax. A little you time. Enter Chumba Casino. With no download required, you can jump on anytime, anywhere for the chance to redeem some serious prizes. So treat yourself with Chumba Casino and play over 100 online casino-style games, all for free. Go to ChumbaCasino.com to collect your free welcome bonus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Life with CIDP can be tough, but the Thrive Team, a specialized squad of experts, helps people living with CIDP make more room in their lives for joy. Watch Rare, Well Done.
An all-new reality series, Rare, Well Done, offers help and hope to people across the country who live with the rare disease CIDP. Watch the latest episode now, exclusively on RareWellDone.com.
Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.